and welcome to Forward Forum for March 8th, 2009. John Quinlan here with
Stephanie Woods.
And for old time's sake.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, bring him up.
Who's here?
Harry Waisburn's in here.
All right. Our old colleague Harry Waisburn is here to join us today on what will be...
Such a treat today.
It will be. It'll be great. Old home week here. A chance to catch up. And also a great chance just to talk about some of the issues of the day that we were talking about all last year. Following that presidential race and now seeing how things are shaping up. Should be an exciting opportunity to revisit some of these issues with Harry and continuing some of our favorite themes like intergenerational organizing, campus community connections. And Harry, you're just back from what conference and where?
I went to the Power Shift Youth Summit in Washington, D.C. this past weekend. 12,000 students from across the country came to really emphasize to our government and media figures that preventing climate change is the issue for youth, and it's an all-encompassing issue. It affects the economy, affects our foreign policy, affects our national security, and it's the kind of thing that we can't wait on anymore.
Okay. I'm sorry not to cut you off, but we'll have chances as we go into the hour to discuss that. One of the other overarching themes, Steph, as you know, is we were thinking, you know, about ways to talk about how the economy is having its effect on people. And there was a very interesting article in the New York Times this morning I had a chance to share with you briefly. And it's just kind of looking at how a younger generation, both everybody from the very young to college-age people and others, are going to be affected by this. And a lot of studies have been done about children who grew up in the Depression or during the wars or you know, other times. And it should be kind of interesting to think about how that's going to work.
I say it's about time. We've gone just way too far on the consuming portion. And I think, not to say that people need to be laid off or we need to have all this horrible stuff happening, but I think it's probably a good time for us to rethink our consumerism. And if that's affecting kids and how they're spending and thinking about money, I say that's a good thing.
Such a John Quinlanism.
It's so great to have you here. That's exactly what it is, a John
I'm
Quinlanism.
Already getting, I'm already
I'm
getting
so glad you're here to
on.
Help me out with this. I've missed you.
This isn't so cool. Oh, well.
Stephanie, you're warming my heart.
Here we are.
The sexual tension is just so thick. You can cut it with a spork, I tell you. Yeah, or something like that. I don't know.
How's your weekend been? You've been doing some crazy stuff.
I've been hanging out with this guy, actually.
Have you? Yeah, you were on Community TV yesterday on Harry's show.
That's right, on Mad Progress TV, from which actually normally airs when?
Normally airs at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoons.
The latest information we actually have on the line, Barbara Bolin, who is executive director over at WYOU. Barbara, are you there?
Hi, John.
Hey, welcome to Forward Forum.
Thank you very much for having me on. Appreciate it.
The notion of people creating their own media, the media environment becoming more and more interactive. Sounds like you all are on the cutting edge. You alluded to the funding situation. I think, again, we won't go into great detail this year other than to say that there are some junctures coming up here where there may be a significant cutback in city funding, and you're trying to forge ahead and work on that and work with the city. And we hope we'll have a chance maybe in the next month or so to have you back and maybe some of the other volunteers at the station just kind of paint that picture and give us more updates as you move forward with all of this. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me, John.
All right. Best wishes, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Again, that website is wyou.org, now streaming live, your chance to see their programs in a different way. We patiently waiting on the phone. Sol, I'm sorry we missed you at the outset. I know you've got a busy afternoon ahead of you. Sol Kelly Jones, are you there?
I am.
Thank you so much for waiting. And you are in the midst of rehearsals, and so we will probably just cut right to the punch about what people need to know about what's coming up this coming Friday, premiere of very interesting work. Can you tell us a little bit about that at Broome Street Theater?
At Broome Street Theater, yes. We'll be opening this Friday at 8 o'clock, and the show will be running for 6 weeks, every Friday, Saturday night at 8 p.m., and every Sunday at a 2 o'clock matinee. And this performance is called The Birds That Are Your Hands, How to Start a Fire Under Siege, and it takes us from Israel-Palestine, primarily the West Bank and Gaza, to the border, the U.S.-Mexico border, and kind of tells a tale reveals a landscape of borders that divide and sever and cut, and kind of the voices that we oftentimes don't hear that have been, I would say, really relegated to the margins. Everything from Palestinian farmers to migrants to protesters to elders to young people.
And there's more background on the internship, the trip that you actually took, two trips, of course, both to the West Bank and to the U.S.-Mexican border near Tucson, among other places. Mm-hmm. And we encourage people to go to forwardforumexchange.blogspot.com. The very first listing there is a show that Sol did, along with a young man that she met over in Palestine, named Nathan Beck, and fascinating dialogue that we had talking about some of the deeper meanings here. For folks who are wondering, the title of the show, do you mind giving away, or is that a spoiler?
It might spoil a little. But it's really about people in the everyday. It's not the kind of people stories we hear all the time. It's people who have been silenced. It's people who we don't see on the news. It's kind of the stories that are beneath and behind. And it's also about the hands. It's what we carry. It's what we hold. It's how we express and how we share. There's one thing that's always said in the West Bank, and it talks about in waiting, so many people at checkpoints, kind of in these militarized walls and borders and occupations in so many different ways, and how there's always time for a story. But oftentimes, I think here in Madison, here in the United States, we don't have the opportunity to hear these stories. And obviously, there's lots of different reasons for that. I think your radio show is one of the few places that really breaks through that deadening silence. But that to speak with an urgency, even our hands move. So it really is about the people in the everyday. It's the people who survive and the people who don't. It's the people who make the crossing. It's the people who are kept in literal prisons surrounded by these walls. It really has a lot to do with kind of these militarized and racialized borders and walls in our world right now that we are currently erecting. And it kind of draws parallels, these interconnections between these stories. It lays out a landscape that I think is very troubling, but also infused with power and resistance. So it's also how these hands that have been denied movement still move, still weave, still build.
And again, it's based. It's while there are vignettes, dramatic vignettes that you brought into the play based on some of the stories that you heard. It's a multimedia presentation as well.
It is a multimedia presentation. And actually, all the stories, although they are not based in one individual story or one person's experience, they come right out of people's tales that I've had the privilege of hearing. I spent 3 months working in the West Bank of Palestine. Teaching drama and kind of theater of the press work in refugee camps throughout the West Bank. And I spent the summer working in an immigrant rights organization along the U.S.-Mexico border in Tucson. So it comes out of real people's stories, these real experiences of what it means to have your very body marked and divided and inscribed with this violence. The cast is incredible. to the show. I think it offers an opening and an opportunity to look at some issues in different ways, but also hopefully come into conversation about it. I hope it can be an entrance into these worlds that can be oftentimes very complex and very confusing and very much invisible.
By way of being a conversation, you've set up some special talkback sessions, and that's for the Sunday matinees?
They're the Sunday matinees, except for the first and last one. It will be every Sunday there will be a matinee, and we'll have a couple different speakers from Rafa Sister City Project, from a couple different immigrant rights groups here in Madison. And there will be facilitated talkbacks where we can actually see everything that happens on stage and then talk about it and see what's going on here, ask questions, be able to be in dialogue with the cast and with some just really amazing activists that are doing important work here in Madison and connecting to issues globally and locally.
Okay, I'm pleased to be saying that, yeah, at least on one of those occasions, I'm going to be rushing from the radio show down there to help you with that. We've mentioned this, but just to bring home the point again.
And this is a different kind of work. It's the kind of work we're not seeing all over the place. This is a very collaborative effort. And remember, this is coming out of real people's stories and real people's experiences, and I would highly encourage everyone to see it. And to come as a challenge, to come as an opening, and to come to see a different perspective, a different set of hands.
And we've talked about this is a theme that is through the other interview, but just before we leave, I think in terms of expectations, you know, you always said it's very important. To a certain extent, there is a cry always for balance on this issue.
Right.
And certainly you want to have an open dialogue. You want to be fairer to the needs of people on all sides of these walls and in different places. On the other hand, you feel a special responsibility for the often invisible, unheard voices and the fact that there are institutions very similar to the U.S. government trying to keep voices squelched around our anti-war efforts, parallels in the Middle East. So people should expect a play with a definite viewpoint, a different opinion, bringing a certain view of the world. You know, but that's the kind of thing that stimulates dialogue.
Absolutely. There's one thing that I'm saying, and I think this will be in the program as well, but this play does not pretend to be balanced. I think when we look at power and we look at the world, life is so much more messy than having black and white, or having a here and there, or having kind of equal playing time. What we hear in our news and what we hear in our papers and what we hear of our elected officials, and even this new man we have in office, which is so exciting, but we're hearing a lot of the same stuff about these borders that we've heard for the last 8 years and we've heard before. And I think this play tries to offer platform to many of the voices that we haven't heard. And they're not all the same opinion. They're actually in conversation with each other. And it's not a soapboxy piece at all. It's really a piece of people sharing their stories and their view, and trying to share some of the landscape. So from there, we can decide and at least come into dialogue and conversation, I think, in a more honest way.
All right. One more time, if you could, the name of the play, the times.
Play is called The Birds That Are Your Hands, How to Start a Fire Under Siege. And it opens this Friday, the 13th, at 8 p.m. at Broome Street Theater. And it will run from March 13th until April 19th.
All right.
Really encourage people to come out and see it.
And I apologize, I should know this, but is it broomstreet.org? Does that sound right for the website?
Broomstreet.org, yes.
Oh, I have to do that on tape because I think you're going to be in the middle of performance during the time of the show. But sure hope everything goes well. And again, an opportunity to stimulate community dialogue around a really important issue. Please come and participate and enjoy this. Again, talkback sessions on the Sunday afternoon performances of The Birds That Are My Hands. Go ahead.
And one more thing. I think it's so important right now, especially with where our economy is and everything going on in our world and locally, to really be supporting community-based art. And I think it's an opportunity to come out and kind of artistically have a conversation about our world. And not only on a global scale, but on a local scale, how it affects us. To be in a really intimate setting, to be with actors who are kind of taking on voices that aren't necessarily their own. And encourage everyone to come out. We need to have these conversations going. I think the most important thing is for us to really be breaking the silence.
All right. Again, we've been speaking with Sol Kelly Jones. The website is broomstreet.org. Thanks for taking time on a really busy day to help us get out the word. All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And so I think we probably should break, don't you think, Steph? And we'll come back. We have one other quick announcement to squeeze in. But then for the remainder of the hour, we'll be talking about, current issues in the news, including kind of weighing how the economic downturn may be affecting today's young people. What effects this may have across the generation should be interesting.
I'm excited.
All right.
Very excited. And Harry's here, so we have every reason to be excited.
Harry Whisper in our old...
I'm here and trying to find a job. Like, it's been awesome. Graduating this year, yeah.
What are we, Craigslist all of a sudden? Come on. Anyway, this is Ford Forum. In a moment, we're going to be hearing about the Perfect Harmony Cabaret Conference coming up this weekend. Back in just a moment. She's got you.
All right, Harry Weisbrand's in the house.
He's in the house, and I guess I'm just not used to you being here. I'm like, get on that mic. So embarrassing.
No, never mind.
I'm a little off today with the daylight savings.
Some days I just wish I could go back to the old car. I'm sorry. Whoa.
Wait, you mean Laura or Harry?
we won't go either direction. Just total. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, John Steinis is on the line waiting very patiently here. John, thank you so much for holding for us. But we want to get out the word about a very important and exciting event for Perfect Harmony, the men's chorus. And you're trying something kind of unusual in the form of a cabaret performance. Can you tell us a little of the details?
Sure. This is actually our fifth cabaret, but they've kind of evolved during the time we've been doing them. The last three cabarets have included some form of storytelling. It's like storytelling. This cabaret is called The Dark Mirror, Reflections of Gay Life Since the Stonewall Riot. And it's narrated by three characters who represent 14th Italian Commedia dell'arte characters, or Matachino, or court gestures, we might know them as. And they represent oppression, recognition, and liberation. And they will take us through the three acts. And most of the show is focused on music. The cabaret was developed to give soloists and small ensembles a chance to shine. Most of our work is choral. We do some choral numbers in this show, but this is really a chance for individuals to shine.
And just to, in case there's any confusion out there, I think when I first heard the word cabaret, I thought Joel Grey, Liza Minnelli. this isn't a production of cabaret per se, right?
No, absolutely not.
All right. Well, you know, you've alluded to this, but this is an historic year in the sense that the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion is coming up in June. And is that part of what you're trying to accomplish here, is to resonate with that history, and especially maybe for young people who maybe aren't aware of the folks who went before them, kind of give them some sense of that?
Absolutely. It's a really interesting year for us, a combination of this show. Our spring show is going to focus on civil rights history, equal, not special, is what that's going to be called. And then we're doing a collaboration with Stage Q and Proud Theater, another show on the commemoration of the 40th anniversary of Stonewall this summer. So we've got Stonewall on our mind. And it's really exciting to be addressing issues like this that need attention. You know, always need to be revisited. It's amazing how many people, even in our own group, don't know what Stonewall was, or you know what a lot of the issues were.
All right, John. I apologize. We're running out of a little bit this time. But
sure.
are there events further ahead in the year that you want to get word out about then as well?
Well, the spring show is May 30th, and we do a benefit. We're going to do a benefit this year down in Janesville for the Rock County AIDS Network branch. We also, if you go to our website, perfectharmonychorus.org, you can order tickets online.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us. And I apologize for the last minute nature of this. We'll get you on and we'll feature some music and do some other things in advance of that that May event. And please
that
let us know
great.
How we can help.
Thanks a lot for having us.
All right. Thank you, John.
Bye.
All
now,
right.
John, did you sing? I can't remember. Was that one of your specialties?
Well, I have in the past.
Were
I
you have in that group?
I haven't been because they
did
met.
You didn't make the cuts?
No, because they met on Sunday nights, and I had this other obligation until quite recently.
So you could try out this time around now.
They have tryouts again, I believe, in the fall.
Are you going to try out?
It's possible now that I've got the opportunity.
They sound really great.
They really do.
I mean,
they're
brings
fun group.
Tears to my eyes.
My housemate Steve is part of that.
I think you should try out.
Okay, we'll take you up on that. One of these times we'll surprise you with bumper music that includes
who's singing?
Who knows?
Hey, you know, speaking of singing,
yes.
Last night I was doing some karaoke.
You were?
And just because you work in radio doesn't mean you have a good voice.
Oh, come on.
I was awful.
Aw. But on the
fact,
other hand,
I was booed off the stage at my friend's house.
But you still have a career in cameo spots in
as
films about giant chickens, though.
Which is what we're going to be talking about.
You want to make the rest of the segue here?
Absolutely. We have got Tashai Lovington on the phone from Tashai and Robert, of the filmmakers of Mad City Chickens. Welcome, Tashai.
Hi, thank you.
Hey. And the DB. Go ahead.
The website is www.tarazod.com.
And if I could ask you, what does that mean? is that a long story?
It's kind of long. I'll try to make it short. It is actually a made-up word. Robert and I made up Terrazade, kind of trying to make it distinctive. There's so many companies out there and so many things, titles now, that it's hard to get something that is distinctive. So we made it up.
That's a great.
Kind of like Kodak made theirs up.
And the DVD is going to be out?
The DVD will be released on March 25th.
Oh, we got a date now. Okay.
Yes.
Good.
24th, actually.
And actually, the meeting that I had on Tuesday has been canceled, so I think I'm going to be there. So I encourage people to come. And, we're looking forward to actually seeing it with an audience, because there's a whole, as we were saying last time, a whole other dimension to that. So it should be a lot of fun.
It's for Mad City Chickens. You won't be disappointed.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us and for all the fun we had last week, too.
Yes, thanks. It was great.
All right.
We'll
take
see you Tuesday.
Bye, Tisha.
Okay, bye.
And once more, if you're interested in that, what I'm going to have to do, we have so many different events and sort of 2 degrees of separation of all of this stuff, too, that we'll get up on the website. But it's forwardforum.net, at least as starters, which will take you to our blog, which is forwardforumexchange.blogspot.com. We'll have all of these details up. It's kind of funny because here we were promoting something involved with Perfect Harmony and Proud Theater, and Soul helped found that, and here we're talking to Shishai, and of course there's Robert back at WYOU, and it just, you know,
it's just this big circle of love.
It is
community.
It is
such a great city with, you know, for community. I wouldn't move anywhere else.
That's right. But hey, as we finish out this segment, why don't we check in with Mr. Waisburn, Harry Waisburn, again, long-time co-host this show for about a year and through the end of...
Was it that long?
Yeah, from most of 2008, I think, wasn't it?
Holy cow.
Yeah, the first time I came on was with our presidential rhetoric course.
That
I
was
think,
back in November of 2007, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We want to have you join in our larger discussion in just a minute about kind of where things are going and some of the generational aspects of what's happening in the world with the economic downturn. But got to catch up on some other news. So you tell us a little bit about this this conference you just attended. Mm-hmm. Again, it's part of this bigger theme. Is it really striking a chord, this notion of campus community connection?
Well, I think what this conference, the Power Shift Summit that I went to, really represents is more the split with my generation and other generations, sadly. And there is this disconnect because the way we've been raised is just so radically different than generations before us. I mean, not only did we grow up with things like the internet and cell phones and video game systems, but we grew up having to watch in slow motion the press and our political class completely fall apart up with the Monica Lewinsky scandal, and then watch the 2000 election recount, and then watch 9/11, and then watch the Iraq war, in which we exploited 9/11 to have a war for permanent military bases close to oil resources. And really, it's I feel like it has profoundly changed millennials, is what they call us. And this will come in a lot into the discussion we have about economics and people my age. But I think that it's something that's really going to reverberate throughout our society, much like it did in with the greatest generation, as we call them now, after the Great Depression and how they stepped up.
You know, part of the reason we're talking about this is this article in the New York Times today, and I want to get your reaction to one of these observations this makes. It says, surveys have shown young people today becoming more civic-minded, especially in the last 4 years. Those who study them suggest that this is going to increase only because jobs will be recreated in creating the public institutions, the infrastructure of a new economic order. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense to you?
It does. And I think it's particularly interesting because civics classes in middle and high schools were completely cut. But it's happened nonetheless because people my age, even though we weren't learning a lot of this stuff in school, we were able to recognize viscerally that something was very, very wrong. When we were learning that America became this superpower, the leader of the free world, at the height of American power, and then we were watching all these undemocratic things occurring, and it made no sense. I mean, and at the time, I remember very specifically, I wasn't able to put my finger on really what was wrong with this country, but I'm not going to suggest that it's an easy thing to decipher now, but learning about democracy, even in the little ways we learned about it in middle school, and then seeing it in action and recognizing that disconnect creates this groundswell of motivation to actually fix this.
Is that what something that you and your peers, if I could interrupt you, mm-hmm. were talking about? I mean, you guys were sitting around saying, hey, this doesn't make sense to us. And as a group, you guys were upset and I'm losing my word here, but questioning the government and how we're doing.
I think it's, especially at the beginning, it's more just a feeling like we have to do something. And
as a group, though, you were talking with your friends about that.
For me, my path to this has been different because I've gone through different media channels, like working with John to really try to just speak out about this stuff. But if you look at activists, student activists my age, they're willing to put in ungodly amount, like man hours and the cold and the snow outside all day long on Friday nights. I mean, they're passing out literature. They're doing all this stuff, more activism than probably at any other point in the history of the country. Yet it's this question, like you said, of like people having this discussion like, oh, we need to do this because of this and this. I don't think it's as that so much. I don't even know if it's as conscious a motivation, but people recognize what our country is supposed to be and they know it's not there and they feel an internal need to work to fix it because we grew up with this great image of ourselves, feeling great as Americans, that we were part of this country that would make tolerance and freedom of speech and equality the drivers of what makes America and what makes the world great. And when that was betrayed, I think that we felt the need to step up, and now we're seeing the reaction from that.
Where are things going? What is the status of a younger generation, whether it be college age or the folks that are in diapers now? Where what is the economic downturn, the changes in the world for good or for bad? What does that mean for their future? Again, has something been discovered that's been studied about generations that were born in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and beyond? What does it mean for someone who was born in the millennial decade? Ford Forum here, back in just a moment.
Welcome back to Ford Forum. I'm Stephanie Woods here with
John Quinlan and
Oh, I'm sorry, Harry. I should go ahead.
Harry Weisbrand.
It's Harry Weisbrand.
We think there's something subliminal going
there
on.
There is.
There could be.
His mic is just not on.
Okay. Now you got to compensate now. Now you bring him into the conversation. Okay?
And our guest for this hour, Harry Weisbrand, who we're very glad to have with us. And so, John, I need to ask you a question as we jump back into things here. Before we went to the break, you said the old folks in diapers. You said the folks in diapers.
I did say the old folks, but like I said,
you
folks,
just said folks in
folks
diapers.
Folks is colloquially expression.
And I was thinking, do you mean the babies or the old people?
No, I meant the babies. I spend all this time in places like Virginia and Alabama and Oklahoma.
And they call babies folks?
I don't know if they do, but they use the term folks.
I got two or three folks back home, me and Ma.
So yeah, no, it was just a slip of the tongue. Sometimes you know,
I'm thinking,
terms like potpourri or
yes,
outstanding.
We have, what do we call them, Harry? The Johnisms?
John Quinlanisms.
Sometimes they're intentional and sometimes they just don't make any sense whatsoever. So.
I'm thinking they're going to be offended if you're talking about the older folks in the diapers. I don't know if I'd want to be referred to that way. I'm sure you don't.
No,
let's be sensitive, John. Okay. You're talking about babies, though.
Okay. Mr. PC gets put in his place. Fine. Okay.
Anyway,
we're being rude to our guest. Come on.
Welcome.
Well, again, what we wanted to talk about is, actually, Steph, let's see what you have in terms of thoughts on this. I mean, so what do you think it's going to mean for someone who, instead of being showered with all kinds of gifts and the latest dolls, the latest, pickup truck toys or, you know, whatever happens to be out there or the Wii and... Anyway, you know, potentially people aren't going to be able to get those things for their kids anymore. That's one manifestation of all of this. So they talk about the time of the Depression where kids had to get by with less. What do you think? Are there pluses and minuses about that kind of change happening?
I am a kid who came from a very meager background, we'll say.
Okay.
Didn't have a lot. So with the way we are today, I know it's real easy to generalize and say kids have too much today. They've got, you know, too many technological things. They've got, you know, cell phones and whatnot at an age that I don't think is appropriate. So to be honest, although I wouldn't say layoffs and the economy taking a downfall is a good thing, at the same time, I really think it's going to be a great way for us to get in touch with what's important and not be such huge consumers of everything. I just think it's time we scale back And I think that this is going to be great for our families, unfortunately, but that the economy has this downturn. So I'm trying to see the silver lining in all this. And I think it's going to be a good thing because we've got way too much stuff. Unfortunately, that's how it is. And it takes something like this to make that stop. However, I don't, as Harry was saying, I don't, kids who are graduating from college or high school going into the job market, they've got it really tough right now. And I don't envy them at all. But good does come with bad. So
yeah, Harry, we've talked about that, you know, just on a very personal basis. It's got to be a tough time. Can you both talk about that? And are there some silver linings maybe in terms of these values changes?
It's definitely a tough time, but for any college graduate looking for a job. But I would emphasize our time is not nearly as tough as the people in their 30s, 40s, whatever age that have kids and healthcare that they were reliant upon that are losing that. I consider myself very lucky to be at a certain age where I'm not that attached to that much. So me being poor at this age isn't that nearly as big a deal. But I would completely agree that there's a silver lining because the argument that for every reaction there's an equal and opposite reaction, I think applies more to this than anything we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the rampant consumerism and the decadence of our country. It's affected us in the most profound way that our economy has completely collapsed. And people are going to get it, as Stephanie's describing, that there's more to life than just rampant consumerism and propping up corporations. And people are going to get it together and get the country and the world back on the right track.
You know, at the same time, it's kind of a double-edged sword where you say, you know, let's cut back on spending, and yet there's small businesses out there that need to make it. So there's this delicate balance that we need to keep in mind.
You know, on WYOU yesterday, the show that followed us was, I think, by Dane County or by local. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that isn't contradictory at all. Mm-hmm. I think of all my friends that run restaurants. You know, Barb Wright at the Darnells and Peng He and Ma Zheng Wu at Taste of Asia, and patronize those restaurants, please. I'm sorry to slip that in. But I mean, you know, I think these are great places. This is part of the culture of Madison that we have this great variety. You know, not to mention locally owned grocery stores and bookstores and other things. You know, we don't want those things just to slide away because it's going to be 10 times as hard to bring them back as it is to help and support them in the meantime.
What's your perspective on all this, John, on how it affects the youth and the, what are we calling them, the millennials?
Yeah, you know, I guess the thing I would hope, you know, and I guess somewhere in the middle here, I mean, maybe my grandparents were born at the turn of the last century, I mean, 1898 or thereabouts, and I think of how they grew up, my parents, 1925 and 1931 respectively, so they certainly were influenced by that era of the Depression, but I think in their cases, I think in a pretty positive way. Mm. I think that's root of their altruism, their empathy for other people is maybe understanding. You know, some of the tougher times.
That's a great point.
This New York Times article, to a certain extent, I think is a bit too pessimistic, a bit too simplifying in its description of human nature, because it's sort of what it describes is that sort of kids born in an era like this are put in a cocoon. They're protected from the horrible things that are happening, and so they're more likely to depend on systems and institutions. And you know, whether that's corporations or government or whatever, they're going to be trusting. They're not going to be innovators. They're going to be very, very conservative. And I think it can go the other way.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. We've got Laura downtown.
Hey.
Hi, Laura.
Hey, welcome.
Wait, another co-host of John's
really,
from before.
It really is a home week. So now I really can't say which other co-host
I might. John.
Okay, all right.
I think we could decide who's John Quinlan's favorite co-host by a cage match.
What?
Cage match. It's the only way.
This guy. What are your thoughts, Laura?
Well, I have to be honest. My peers, the people I grew up with, I mean, I'm very disappointed that you know, we took on all this debt,
mm-hmm.
and we have no way to repay it.
Yeah. I heard recently a speaker that her name is Kathy Kelly. She came to town and a peace activist. But one of the things that keeps her going is all of, I believe Kathy's probably in her mid to late 50s. You know, the young people that she meets, the people in their 20s, though, that are giving her hope. And she says, you know, despite the fact that we're turning over a world that's in pretty rough shape.
Does she have kids?
I believe she both has kids, but she also just has this peer group of people, including people that helped care for her and family members when they were sick and other things. She really makes a point of reaching out, being connected to a younger generation. And that gives her some optimism. I just wonder if you feel any parallels, because I know that through the station
optimism.
And other places.
Jeez, no. I have no optimism.
Okay.
What do we do? Where do we go from here?
Yeah. And it's you feel like, anyway, the generation that you're a part of is really could have done something much better, huh?
And I thought we were supposed to. I mean, I really felt that we had a grasp on, you know, a more vibrant future, and apparently we didn't.
Okay. Well, let's just go around the room again and get some sense. Having people have gone before can be a double-edged sword sometimes. And you need to think both in terms of lessons you can learn, but also that it's not destiny. How do you come down, Harry, when you hear some of the pessimism about that? Because other generations thought they could make a difference too.
I think it's completely understandable, but I think that coming from my perspective of like watching in slow motion the country collapse all around me, I'm profoundly optimistic that people actually get it now. They get that the media is not depicting reality as it really is, and they get that they really need to do something, and they get that our way of life before wasn't sustainable, and that we need profound change if we're going to keep going. And I think the fact that people across the country and across the world have figured this out, that's the biggest development we've seen in this country probably in decades. I don't know what else to compare it to.
Do you have any further thoughts?
I'm cautiously optimistic. I think people aren't all getting it. I'm amazed at how many people at work I talk to who are still, my day job, who are still kind of in the dark about things. But we can still, you know, get to them. And I am not giving up hope. And I think Obama's got a lot in store. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do.
Harry, while we've got you here, are there some efforts, some things underway that you'd like to encourage people to be involved with? Obviously, we've talked about WYOU is one outlet.
I've been doing a lot of different work with Wisberg. They're a student organization on campus. They also have not only for students, they have a City of Madison chapter as well. And it's been incredible working with them. They have like 7 different ongoing campaigns going on. And I think in general, just the work me and John have been doing, and Stephanie with incredible help too, trying to really connect campus and community is one of the biggest initiatives that Madison really needs to focus on.
Okay. Well, it's clearly something we're going to be talking about over time, and very important, again, to continue to build those campus and community issues, some of those connections, the interconnections between different things. This has been Forward Forward. John Quinlan, Stephanie Woods, Harry Weisbrand. We'll see you next week.